So the last few weeks we've been looking at the Ten Commandments, and a few weeks ago we looked at an introduction to honoring parents. Tonight I'd like to look at some of the actual details, the practicalities, and I think it's important that you ask questions if there are practical things that I might leave out. So, but give me a chance first to try to describe the approach to this mitzvah in terms of practical halachic expression. That, on that occasion, we discussed the introduction. Why is honoring parents one of the Ten Commandments? You know, there are many other important, critically important things in Torah. Everything is really why these ten, and why honoring parents. We also discussed why honoring parents is the fifth of the ten, when it's very clear that the first five commandments are between humans and God, and the second five are interpersonal between humans. So why is honoring parents, which is really between people after all, me and my parents, why is that listed on the first five, which is really my relationship with Hashem? We tried to explain then that really honoring your parents correctly is incredibly important in the sense that it takes you back and links you in, locks you in, if you like, to a relationship with Hashem. That means that when you relate to other people, you're also relating to Hashem, because each person has a spark of divine essence in them. But when you relate to your parents, there's a unique aspect of human relationships, which is that these are the only people in the world that are the direct cause of your existence. And therefore, when you connect to them correctly, you're connecting back to the chain that ultimately takes you to the back of, to the beginning of all humanity, which is a product directly of Hashem's handiwork, as it were, and that's how you begin the journey back into God consciousness and connecting with Hashem. And it should be a small step from here to understand why honoring grandparents. Can you see why honoring grandparents is also an obligation? Can you see that? Let's pretend this evening we're not English. Let's pretend we're South African. Are we together?
Yes.
Just work on the accent, it'll be fine. So, honoring grandparents, obviously, that's the next step back. If you're looking to follow the chain back to the beginning of humanity, then looking back to your parents is really the beginning of a process, and looking back to grandparents. And in fact, the Torah makes no distinction between parents and grandparents in many ways, and we'll see, hopefully, that you also have an obligation to relate to grandparents. Fascinating discussion about exactly what the derivation is. So let's this evening turn our attention to the mitzvah of honoring parents, a lot of surprising things that people are not aware of. And let me try to paint a picture of this mitzvah. I think maybe a good way to start is by saying that what many people who have not studied these things have a picture of this mitzvah is quite mistaken or distorted. Most people think that honoring parents means a certain emotional reverence and sort of looking up to them in a certain relationship, a psychological, emotional relationship. The truth is that's the least important part of the mitzvah. The least important part of the mitzvah is really how you think about your parents, or how you sort of respect them, as we say in English. It is important. You are supposed to identify qualities that your parents have that are worthy of respect. After all, you can't respect them for things that are not worthy of respect. Yeah, some people have parents who are not worthy of respect. You know, they do have parents who are problematic, no? Evil, bad, immoral. Well, you're not supposed to respect that, that's for sure. So even in the case of parents who are immoral or abusive and in fact cause a tremendous suffering to the child, ongoing suffering, even there you should try to identify something that is good. Not even the worst person in the world has something that they do, you know, somebody who's terrible all the time. At least they're consistent. So you should look for something that's worthy of respecting your parents and look up to that. That is true. But the mitzvah is really a practical thing. And in fact, many authorities like the Rambam hold that even if your parents are really bad, you're fully obliged in all the mitzvah of honoring parents. That means even where you have to have a complete disconnect, disparity, between disrespecting them and their values, you still have to do all the mitzvah obligation, like standing up when they walk into the room, not using their first name, not contradicting them. Why? Because here's the key. The mitzvah of honoring parents is not an emotional respect, right? Because you ought to respect them. It's a specific halachic process because they brought you into the world. And therefore, in the most extreme example, your parents never knew you. They gave you away. They first abused you and then gave you away. You were brought up by foster parents, right? You never met your parents before, except for when you were... And then one day you meet your... I have a friend who met his mother when he was 35. I have a friend. He was adopted. He has respect. He owes that mother who brought him into the world these mitzvahs. The fact that she didn't bring him up, the fact that he never knew her, that's not relevant to the mitzvah. So let's try to get that clear. And there are many other misconceptions. I'll give you one classic one. A woman came to see me once, and I'll never forget this because it's one of the rare occasions in my personal experience where I was successful in counseling. You know, I spend a lot of time counseling people. People end up doing what they want to do. Usually they come and they seek your advice, but they end up doing... Sometimes if you're a skilled counselor, you can help people want the right thing. Sometimes, if you know how to do it. But to get somebody to do what they don't want to do, usually they don't hear that. They only hear from you what they want, usually. So it's difficult to be a counselor and to try to help people. But on this occasion, it was dramatically successful. So I'll never forget it. She came to see me. She was a woman who was on the verge of collapse. She walked in shaking. She had big rings under her eyes. You could see on the verge of a breakdown. Why? Because she had a mother who was very problematic. Very problematic. I'm talking about a mother who lived only by the sense of guilt that she could suck out of her children, right? You know, the mother was divorced, not surprisingly, from the description. I think the husband had run off with a maid. It was a desperate last resort. And the mother insisted on living in a big old house in a very dangerous part of town on her own so that the daughter would worry. Right? And every night at 1 o'clock in the morning, she'd phone the daughter and say, "I'm having chest pain, you have to come over." So she'd get out of bed and drive across town on her own, dangerous part of town, to go and see her mother. And that's happening every night. So the girl's on the verge of collapse. Her marriage is just about to collapse. Husband can't take it anymore. She's emotionally, she doesn't sleep. And then when she gets home in the morning, the mother phones her, keeps on the phone for an hour or two, putting the claws of guilt right into her. Why is she doing this? Because she thinks she's obliged to do this to honor her mother. If your mother calls, you should go. So she thought that, you know, not a particularly religious girl, but she thought that she's a Jewish girl and she has a mitzvah to honor her mother. And therefore, she has to do these things. Right? And I didn't counsel her. I simply sat there for 20 minutes and learned with her the laws of honoring parents. For example, a woman is exempt from honoring her parents while she's married. A woman is completely exempt from honoring her parents while her husband needs her. Right? If she's with her husband and the mother calls, you don't go. Because the law is, you're not allowed to disrespect your parents. You can't transgress the dishonor aspect of parents. And if your husband's not around, you have to go and see your mother. But a woman is exempt from honoring her parents because her husband comes first. So we learn through all the laws. Secondly, it doesn't say you have to feel guilty and have your life wrecked. That's not honoring parents. Honoring parents means standing up, not using their first name, not arguing with her. And as soon as she got the laws clear, the relationship was fine. So I told her, next time your mother phones at 1 o'clock in the morning, you say, "Mom, take an aspirin, I'll be there in the morning." And when the mother phones in the morning, instead of crying on the phone because she makes her feel guilty, take the phone and speak to your mother and go, yes, no, You know, and do what you have to do. So 3 days later, the problem was solved. The mother now phones the son in Australia and drives him crazy. But we solved the problem simply by clarifying the girl didn't understand. She thought the law of honoring your parents obliges you to feel terrible and to feel guilty and let your parents wreck you emotionally. And it's not explicitly not right. The Talmud says, for example, let's say you have an emotionally difficult relationship with a parent and you get to a point where you cannot take the relationship. It's too harmful for you emotionally. You can leave them and make sure they're taken care of by somebody else. The Talmud has a case no less than an Amoy, one of the Talmudic sages, whose mother became a little elderly and a little senile. And when she got older, she started asking him to buy her expensive jewelry. So he used to buy expensive jewelry for his mother. Then she started asking him to find her a man as good looking as him for her. And he felt it was a bit extreme, and he went to live in Israel. He left his mother in Babel, where she was, in Iraq, Iran, wherever it was, and he went to live in Israel. But he made sure she was taken care of. You can't abandon a parent. You have to make sure that they're taken care of by proxy. But if it's too damaging for you, so you have to know the laws. When you know the laws clearly, it's a whole different thing. So let's go through some of the laws, what we can cover in one discussion. The practical laws of honoring parents, extremely important, as I said. The Torah mitzvah, it's one of the Ten Commandments. And it pays, like any mitzvah, to know the details and to get it right. and it is extremely difficult mitzvah. The Gemara makes it plain that it's one of the most difficult mitzvahs in the Torah. You know that the Torah famously does not give reward for mitzvahs. You know that. It gives punishments, but doesn't give reward. Right? We know there's a sense of reward according to how difficult a mitzvah is. That's one sense of reward, what's called lefum tsara agra, according to the difficulty is the reward. But the objective reward, the cosmic effect of mitzvahs, we're not told. There are only two mitzvahs that the Torah tells you a reward for. Honoring parents and sending away the mother bird. And funnily enough, in both cases, the Torah gives the same reward. Length of days, whatever that means. Long life. Whatever long life means, it doesn't mean in this world, it means in the next world. And the Talmud says like this, these are the most difficult and the most easy mitzvah in the Torah. Sending away a mother bird, there's nothing easier. Just to shoo away the bird, just go like that, the mother bird flies away, take the eggs or the chicks. You're not allowed to take them when the mother's there. Easiest mitzvah. Reward, long life. And the hardest mitzvah in the Torah is honoring parents, and it gives the same reward. To show you that you can't tell the reward for mitzvahs. It's not given to us to know which mitzvahs. And the Medrash, this is not tonight's subject, the Medrash says that if the Torah would tell you what the reward is for the mitzvahs, we'd all do the high-paying ones. Everyone would spend his time doing the mitzvahs that you get more reward for. And the garden would not be beautiful. All the plants would not be planted. So Hashem doesn't tell you the reward for mitzvahs. And therefore, the example is given, the easiest mitzvah, the hardest, the same reward. But we learn from this that honoring parents is a very hard mitzvah. It's almost impossible to do adequately. There's one case in the Talmud of a son, one of the rabbis, whose mother was walking outdoors and her shoe broke. Her sandal broke. So he insisted that she walk back to the house on his hand. Right? When the sages heard about it, they said, you didn't even begin with a mitzvah. That's nothing. To really honor parents properly, right, is almost impossible, very hard, and so it pays to understand how to do it. If you have the special privilege of having difficult parents, then you can do the mitzvah better, right? More effort, you can specialize in it better. So that is a special problem. So let's try to understand tonight the mitzvah. The mitzvah falls into two categories. Right? One is called kibud and one is called yira. Let me try to explain the difference. Yira, in English, the words are, the translation of these words is very non-specific. But yira means awe or reverence or respect. And kibud means positive honor. Right? Left hand, right hand. Restraint or respect. Positive what you have to do for the person. By the way, that's always a relationship of respect. One has kavod for one's rebbe, one's Torah teacher, right? It's always a mixed feelings. Kavod means that you love to be close to him, you admire the person, you could think of nothing more pleasurable than drinking in his presence and his words and his teachings. On the other hand, you are in awe and you can't come too close because you have a reverence and almost a fear. Right? That's how you should feel about Hashem. You should want to be, to revel in closeness to Hashem and love and yet be in tremendous awe. Right? Therefore, there are two aspects to honoring parents. There's the love and positivity in what you do for them, and there's the reverence and the awe of treating them at a certain distance. Let's go through both sides. First of all, the mitzvah of yira, and by the way, both are equally incumbent on both parents. In other words, you're equally obliged to honor your mother as your father, and equally obliged to have reverence for your father as your mother. Right? The way the Torah puts it is it switches the words. It says, "Kabed et avicha ve'et imecha," honor your father and your mother. But when it comes to fear, it says, "Ish avi ve'imoi ish imoi ve'aviv tira." A person should fear his mother and father. Puts mother and father in opposite priority. Why? To show you that although it's more natural to have reverence for a father, that's wrong. You have to have equal reverence for your mother. And although it's more natural to love your mother because she's warm and brings you up when you're little, that's wrong. You have to be as warm and positive towards your father. So neither parent takes priority. Right? You have equal obligation to honor and revere, positive and negative, your father as your mother. There are examples of conflict, to be sure. Let's say your parents ask you for the same thing at the same time. Right? Your mother and father both call out at the same moment, please make me a cup of tea. Now you can't give them both at the same time. Right? Especially if they're not in the same place. So who comes first in that case? Father comes first. Why does your father get tea first? Because it's your mother's duty to make tea for him as well. One of a wife's duties is to provide food and present food to the husband, right? That's one of a wife's duties. She's supposed to make his bed, the various other things that she's supposed to do. So if, it's worth getting married, huh? So therefore, if your parents ask you for food at the same time, you first serve your father, then you serve your mother. If your parents need clothes at the same time, they're immodestly exposed, right? They're embarrassed. Who comes first?
Mother.
Your mother. Why? Because it's your father's duty to make sure she's dignified before he is. Right? That is his obligation to her. The Rambam says a man must love his wife as himself and honor her more. So when there's only dignity for it, there's only one bed, the wife gets it. There's only one pillow, the wife gets it. There's only one decent outfit, the wife gets it. Right? If somebody has to go begging or be humiliated or ask for a loan or a gift, the husband has to, not the wife. Because all dignity and honor has to be given to her, not to him. Anybody who tells me that Judaism is not feminist, I will personally break their kneecaps. Or, so that's what it is. So so you have equal thing. If a priority presents itself technically, you have to know what to do. Same applies to grandparents and parents. Who comes first? Your grandfather, your father. If there's time, we'll try to discuss that. But the law of honor and reverence is actually equal, applies to mother and father, and applies equally to a daughter and to a son, unless she's married and her husband needs her. There's particular specific exceptions. Let's try to go through an approach to both of these and try to speak out the details. Let's deal with what's called yira first, which means reverence, awe. So here's some of the laws. You're not allowed to do anything that is denigrating or dishonoring a parent. For example, you may not sit or stand in their place. Right? Your father has a place where he stands or sits at home or in shul, let's say. That's his special seat. Child, this is not regardless of age. This doesn't mean children. It means offspring. You can be 80, right, and still be obliged in honoring your 101-year-old mother. It's got nothing to do with how young you are. Okay? This is a question of being their offspring. Of course, little children need to be trained in these things, and little children need to see that their parents treat the grandparents this way. That's the best way of teaching them. So the first thing is you can't sit in your father's place or stand. Let's say he has a meeting place where he stands with his friends. You can't stand in his place. That's an effrontery, and you can't do that. He has a special place. You're not allowed to stand in that place. You're not allowed to use a parent's first name. To call a parent by their first name, even to use their first name, is very familiar, and that's not for a parent. That's for your buddies and your friends, and it's not for a parent to use their first name. Right? By the way, these laws of honor, some of them a parent can waive, and some a parent cannot. The general rule is where you're showing the parent honor, but it's not insulting or offensive, if you don't, they can waive that rule. For example, if your father says, sit in my chair, I don't mind if you sit in my chair, so then he can let you sit in his chair because it's not disrespectful if he's giving you permission. Is that clear? But almost all halakhic authorities hold that your father cannot give you permission to use his first name because it's intrinsically disrespectful when you call your father Joe or Bob or Butch or Slim or whatever they call him. That is familiar. Right? By the way, you know, it's forbidden to call someone by a nickname that's derogatory anyway, not only your parent. You know that the Rambam says you lose a share in the world to come for calling somebody, for coining a nickname for someone, or using a nickname that you didn't make up. Right? So you're not allowed, I'm not talking about nicknames that are derogatory, right? In Judaism, you lose a share in the world to come if you've got a friend that you call Slobo or... that's not good. If it's a neutral nickname, it's just cool, or it's a husband and wife calling each other cookie face, or... that's what does it for you, you know, that's fine, but... that's okay, but we're not talking about... We're talking about a normal name. But it's a parent's name, that you cannot use a parent's name. And virtually all halakhic authorities say a parent cannot give you permission to do that. Just like they can't say, spit at me, or hit me, or do anything objectively disgraceful. Right? You can't do that. They're not free to. They're telling you to transgress a Torah law, and you're not allowed to obey that. But something like, don't stand up when I walk in, right? A parent is allowed to say that to you. Don't, you can sit in my place. That a parent can waive, because that's not intrinsically disrespectful. On the contrary, when you do stand up for them, that's respectful. But if you don't stand up because they don't want you to, that's not intrinsically disrespectful. So here's some of the details. I'll stop afterwards. Yeah? To not stand in a parent's place, that's your mother or father. To not use a first name, the basic approach is like this. if your parent is not present, this regardless if they're alive or not, by the way, even if a parent's not alive, no longer alive, all these laws apply. Right? So, and there are some additional laws apply. You're supposed to say a certain respectful title about parents when they're no longer alive, refer to them a certain way. But if you're, here's the rule about using a name. If your parent is not in the room, then you can use their name if it's a common name. Is this clear? If your father's name is Joe or Bob or David, right, a very common name, if he's not in the room and you happen to mention that name, people present will not assume you're talking about your father. Is that clear? Because it's a common name. You don't have to be talking about your father. So you don't have to be careful not to use that name. But if your father or your mother has an unusual name, right, a very unusual name, then even if they're not present, the name's unusual enough that the people listening to you will assume you're talking about your parent. Therefore, you can't use their name, even if they're not... Is this clear? My father's name, for example, right? My father, Allah Shalom, his name was K-O-P-P-E-L. That was his name, right? That's relatively uncommon. There are people with that name, but it's quite an uncommon name. So I can't say that name to you, because whether he's alive or not, or present or not, the assumption is I'm talking about him. Is that clear? But if you have a parent with a common name, and they're not present, the people would... Or when it's obvious you're not referring to them. For example, you're reading a quote, right? From some quote you're reading, and the name in the quote is your parent's name, but everybody can see you're not referring to your parent, you're reading something. So that's not... There's no question that you're taking your parent's name lightly. That would be okay. If your parent's in the room, then you can't use their name whether it's common or not, because they're present, right? That's a general approach to the question of using the name. So... Third, one must stand up when they walk in. This is debatable whether it's actually from the mitzvah of kibud or yira. When you stand up for a parent, is it because it's disrespectful not to, or are you giving them love and positive? That's debatable. But what's not debatable is the mitzvah. When a parent walks in, you have to stand up. The technical law is you need to stand up once in the day and once in the evening. For example, if you see your parent in the morning, so then when you see them for the first time, you stand up. And then you don't have to stand up every time you see them. Every time your mother walks in, you don't jump up and down, make her dizzy. That you don't have to do. But once in the day, you stand up. It's very nice to rise for them every time they walk in, or at least somewhat to show a deferential thing. But you don't actually have to. And if you haven't seen them all day, you see them in the evening, then you must stand up for them when you see them in the evening. If your parent says, don't stand up, makes me feel strange, don't do it, then you don't have to. But if someone else is present that doesn't know that your father said that, or someone else is present that doesn't know you saw your father that morning, is this clear? You got up in the morning, 8 o'clock, you saw your dad, you had breakfast with him, you stood up for him, right? Half past 8, a friend of yours comes to visit. And at 9 o'clock, your father walks into the room. Your friend doesn't know that you already saw your father and stood up for him. So you've got to stand up again. Is that clear? Because otherwise it would be a dishonor in the eyes of the person who doesn't know that. There you'd have to stand up again. But a parent can ordinarily give you permission not to do that. That is with respect to standing up for a parent. So in general, you are required to do all these things that show reverence and do not in any way denigrate or insult a parent. You may not argue with a parent. You're not allowed to say you're wrong, no matter how wrong they are. You can't say you're wrong because that is familiar. Who are you to judge them and say they're wrong? If they are wrong and need to be told, and if they're wrong about certain things, it's a mitzvah to tell them. There's a mitzvah called tochacha, which means to rebuke a person and show them that they're wrong. But with a parent, it has to be done very, very delicately. So if your father says something blatantly wrong, you have to say, Abba, didn't you once tell us such and such? Or does it not say in the Torah such and such? You have to show him that he's wrong without saying you're wrong. Right? That's not allowed. You're not even allowed to say that he's right. Why? Because that's condescending. Your father's having an argument with someone. You walk in and say, yeah, my dad's right. Who are you to pass judgment on your father? He doesn't need you to say he's right. And therefore, you can't do that. You can say the other fellow's an idiot. That's fine. But you can't say... And by the way, you find this in halachic sources where a great halachic authority is the son of a great halachic authority and he disagrees with his father. Right? He usually, you'll find him doing it in a delicate way. He'll agree with the other one instead of disagreeing with his father. Right? There's certain ways to do this. So you cannot comment on a parent in a judgmental way as if you are superior. There are also other expressions of respect. For example, Let's say you go to buy something in a place where they have a relationship with your father. Your father's a customer in a certain place, right? You go to buy something. Or you go to ask someone for a favor or to deal with someone. If you know they know your parent, then you should not present yourself as an independent person. You should present yourself as a child of your father. You should say, I would like you to sell me such and such, and you introduce yourself as a child of your parents, as if to say you expect them to deal with you in a certain way because of your parents. Is that clear? Rather than go on your own recognizances. Rather give the deference and the respect to your parents. If, however, they don't like your father, like he hasn't paid his bills there for the last 15 years, then you do not present yourself as a child because that will bring a discredit to your parents, right? So you find an opportunity to give the credit, as it were, to your parents, especially when you have parents of good standing and people respect them. You should always proudly present yourself. Right? It's actually a law in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Code of Jewish Law. You present yourself as a child of the parent to give them the deference. You may not obey a parent when they tell you to do something wrong. Right? So let's get that clear. First of all, neutral things. When your parent asks you for something, it's a mitzvah to do what they ask. For example, when your father asks you to spend time, your mother says, your father, please come over Sunday afternoon, we want you to come and spend some time with us, right? You're not allowed to make excuses and find why you can't go. It's a mitzvah to go. First of all, to obey and do what they ask. And secondly, a special mitzvah to spend time with your parents. There's plenty of exceptions. A married woman whose husband wants her to be with him? No. A person who has a bad relationship with a parent so that it will be a conflict-ridden situation? No, then you don't have to, right? Many exceptions. Husband and wife who have a shalom bayis issue, shalom bayit, right? Where their own love and harmony and peace, that must always take precedence over external relationships, right? The, one of the highest values in the Jewish hierarchy is the love and harmony between husband and wife. Almost everything else is set aside for that. But ordinarily, all else being equal, if your parents want you to spend time with them, then you need to go and spend time with the parent. But one of the limitations is you don't have to spend money for that, right? As it happens, I'll try to talk about this separately. The mitzvah of honoring parents technically is at their expense, not yours. Right? You have to give your parents food, for example, as I'll try to explain. So if your father says, could you please bring me lunch? You say, Dad, where's your credit card? And you spend his money. Of course you can spend your money, it's wonderful, but you're not obliged to honor parents at your expense, right? So similarly, if your parent asks you to visit, if it's expensive, you can actually ask them to pay for the transport. Again, you have to use your head, right? There was a man in Yerushalayim who had his father living in Tel Aviv a few years ago. And his father used to want the son to come visit every week. And the son was not a wealthy man, and it cost money to get from Yerushalayim to Tel Aviv. So once he went to Rabbi Yashiv and he said, Rabbi, my father asks me to come every week to see him in Tel Aviv, but it costs me a significant amount of money to go and visit him. Am I obliged? Do I have to pay money to go and see my father every week? Rabbi Yashiv said, no. Walk. Right? That's Torah attitude. But there's a mitzvah too. But if your parents ask you to do something that's contrary to Torah law, even to rabbinic law, even to a custom, even to something that's spiritually not good for you, you do not obey, right? For example, your parent says, come to us on Friday night, we want you to eat on Shabbat with us, and you drive on Shabbat to their home. Nothing doing. Can't break Shabbat to honor a parent. Definitely not. Out the question. That doesn't mean don't honor them. Stay in a hotel. Go stay there. Bring them to you. Move home. Leave the country. You know. But you can't break a Torah law, not even a rabbinic law, not even a custom, and not even something spiritually valuable. For example, your father says, I want you to come and daven in my shul, in his synagogue. But it's not good for you. It's not the kind of place you enjoy. They talk there, for example. Right? Unthinkable, but they talk, right? During the service, people talk. And you daven in a place like the JLE, where no one ever talks in daven, I can assure you. Personally, I always choose to daven in a Baal Tshuva place. Because people who are newly religious take it very seriously. And people who are familiar with it sometimes don't take it so seriously. Sometimes. You either have to be in the extremely knowledgeable world or the very idealistic new world. But be that as it may, your father says, I want you to join my shul, and you know it's not spiritually good, even though it's not forbidden, then you're entitled to, of course you have to use your head. There's a diplomatic way to do these things. And there's a wrong way to do these things. But technically speaking, you do not obey a parent who asks you to do something that is contrary to Torah law, that's for sure. There are also some classic areas where you can disobey a parent. The three classics are to get married, to learn Torah, and to live in Israel. Those are three classics, right? Your parent says, I don't want you to get married, or I don't want you to marry so-and-so, such-and-such. So you can categorically disobey. Again, there's an intelligent way to handle these things, and a stupid way to handle these things. But that when push comes to shove, if your parents do not want you to marry, or do want you to marry somebody that you don't want to, or don't want you to marry somebody that you do, then you are allowed to disobey your parent because it's your marriage, and you have to marry somebody that you feel is suitable. The only place parents can interfere is where you've chosen someone to marry who's an objective disgrace to the family. Right? A real disgrace. A disgrace doesn't mean they've got the wrong color eyes or hair, or they're Iraqi and not Iranian, or Iranian not Iraqi, or they're Sephardi and not Ashkenazi. That is irrelevant. That's not called a... Yeah? What's a dishonor is somebody who's very problematic. They've got a criminal record, they're married already, they, something that's really, really odious. That's a disgrace to your family, not because your parents think it's a disgrace, it's got to be somebody objective, that is a different issue. But if it is not a question of disgrace, then your parents cannot impose. It usually makes very good sense to take parents' advice, very good sense to listen carefully, right? Like one lady came to me for marriage counseling with a totally wrecked marriage, totally bizarre marriage. And after 5 minutes discussion, it was obvious that the man was just totally unsuitable. So I said to her, why did you marry him? She said, because my parents told me not to. You make your bed? So that's the first thing. The second thing is to learn Torah. If you want to learn and your father says, no, I want you to go and do something secular or whatever it is, again, there's a sensible way to handle this and a silly way to handle it, right? When push comes to shove, Torah learning comes before, generally, comes before secular pursuits and other things, including the quality of learning. You want to learn at a better level or in a better place. It's better for you. And there's an argument, technically speaking, you can disobey a parent. And thirdly, classically, if you want to live in Israel and your parents say no, or you want to live in Jerusalem and your parents say live in Tel Aviv. By the way, it's a very interesting law. You know, you can sue for divorce in Judaism. A couple, yeah, spouse. One wants to move to Israel, one doesn't. The spouse who wants to move to Israel can insist on a fully paid divorce, right? Because they're in the right. And if you live in Tel Aviv and you want to live in Yerushalayim, the spouse has to agree. And now there's a right way to handle these things, and there's a wrong way, right? There's a sensible way and a disastrous way. But technically speaking, and therefore, those are the three things that you can, technically speaking, disobey a parent. But as an example of the right and wrong way to handle things, let me give you an example. I know a person who's a very, very prominent Torah educator today, who many, many years ago, maybe many years, 1967 it was living in a certain country, as it happens in South Africa, and he wanted to go learn Torah in Israel, in Yerushalayim. In those days, there really weren't Baal Tshuva yeshivas. It was very new. He was a real pioneer, and he wanted to go and learn. And his mother was terrified. 1967, just after the war, she was absolutely terrified of him moving to Israel. She wouldn't hear of it, but he very much wanted to go learn Torah in Israel. So he went around, asked a number of rabbis, and they all told him what's written, that you have two reasons to disobey your mother. One is you want to live in Israel, and two, you want to learn Torah. And it's written that both, that's two out of three things you're allowed to disobey your parent for, you can clearly go. But one wise rabbi told him, before you do that, write a letter to Rav Moshe Feinstein, great halachic authority in New York at the time. Before you do that, disobey your mother and make her very distressed, write and ask him what to do. Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote back a letter and said, go and learn Torah in Gateshead, England. Right? When he got the letter, he said, like, never heard of Gateshead before. And secondly, they won't take me. Gateshead's for black belts. You know, he was an absolute rank beginner, never learned anything before, could hardly virtually read, right? He wanted to go learn in Gateshead. But what happened was he applied, and when they saw Rav Moshe Feinstein's letter, they accepted him immediately, and it turned out to be the perfect place for him. The perfect place. He was a South African boy. Gateshead was, it's an English place, a very common mentality. They absorbed him, and he became an extremely successful place. I know, had he gone to Israel and tried to get absorbed into an Israeli yeshiva where they feed you garlic flavored with eggplant for breakfast, and, you know, can be a little positive in their method of relationships, you know, it would have been very difficult for him, and turned out to be the perfect lesson. So there's wise way to handle these things and unwise way to handle them, but that is, I can't resist telling you another classic. Here's a classic. There was a young man who wanted to go and study in yeshiva, American young fellow, and his parents were very, very insistent that he should go to college. There's Torah learning, you know, it's not going to earn you a living. We want you to go to college. Terrible argument. And they eventually decided to go and ask Rav Moshe Feinstein. The son knew he's allowed to disobey his parents. He wants to go to yeshiva. They want him to go to college. Couldn't agree. They went and asked Rav Moshe Feinstein, right? Genius halachic authority. He must have been in his 80s, I think, as an elderly man at the time. They went to ask him. So they went, the father, the mother, and the student, they went to sit at Rav Moshe Feinstein's table. And they were put the father knew that he's dealing with a famous rabbi. So he prepared himself very well. He's going to say to rabbi, should my son go to yeshiva or college? Obviously, the rabbi's going to say, go to yeshiva. So he prepared himself. And this is what happened. They sat around the table, and the father said, Rabbi Feinstein, I'm going to prove to you that my son should go to college from a Torah proof. I'll prove to you that according to the Torah, my son should go to college. And here's the proof. The Torah says that every person has three partners to his creation. The Gemara says, every person, there are three parties that create him. His father, his mother, and Hashem. That's what it says. Right? Now, that means that this boy here, my son, there are three partners to his creation. There's me, his father, this lady, his mother, and you, Rabbi Feinstein, you represent Hashem. Now, the Torah also says that we follow majorities. So there's me and his mother wanting to go to college. And you, no doubt, you want him to go to yeshiva, but it's two against one. Therefore, according to Torah principles, he definitely should go to college. So Feinstein said, yes, he said, of course, you're right. Each person is made up by three parties. So let's think about it. It means that you, the father, have three partners in your creation. The mother has three partners in her creation, and so do I. Now let's think about it. The three partners that are you, the father, two are your parents, and one is Hashem. No doubt, the two parts of you that are your parents want him to go to college, but the third part wants him to go to yeshiva, his mother. The two parts to her that are parents probably want him to go to college, but the third part, that is Hashem, wants him to go to yeshiva. All three parts of me want him to go to yeshiva. That's five against four. The father said, Rabbi Feinstein, if that's what they learn in yeshiva, that's where he's going. That's the smart way, right, to handle that situation. So there are clever ways and dumb ways to handle these situations, but those are some of the laws of honoring a parent and prohibition to disrespect. How far does this go? You're sitting in a respected position, head of some big meeting, all eyes on you, television cameras, the whole thing, and while you're sitting there, your parents walk in and start disgracing you. They shred your clothes, they spit at you, they start beating you. Not utter a word. You're in no way allowed to dishonor them. You sit there and take it and feel the privilege of having such a mitzvah. Right? That's how far it goes. You can no way dishonor them or disgrace them. You can stop it. For example, you can tell the guy at the door, and this happens every day, you know, please could you not let him in? Or, you know, take him to the cafeteria and buy him coffee. You don't have to put up with that. But you can't disgrace them. You can't do anything that is offensive or disgraceful or hurtful or insulting, even if they are doing that to you. In fact, even if they damage you, they walk in and they take your money and they throw it in the fire. Or they throw it in the sea, right? You cannot say a word or object. You can prevent them. You don't have to take a loss. You don't have to pay money to honor your parents. It's their expense, not yours. So you don't have to allow that. But if it was done, you cannot disgrace them in any way. You can claim the money back. You can take your father to court. You can take your parents to Beis Din. Why not? If they cause you financial damage, but it has to be done respectfully. It has to be a Beis Din in their town, not yours. You have to stand up when your father walks in. You have to conduct yourself with all the laws of honoring a parent, but you can extract damages. Why not? Is that clear? I'll take this in a second. Remember what your question. So that is the extreme. And finally, on this side of the equation, it is not, listen well to this, it's not only what you do, it's the tone and style that constitutes the mitzvah. For example, let's say you go and spend Sunday with your father, and you feed him, as you're supposed to do, but you do it with a long and bitter face. So the code of Jewish law says you will be punished in the next world for that. Because the style is wrong. You're spending time, but you're making him feel terrible that he's taking your time. So you're not fulfilling the mitzvah, you're transgressing the mitzvah. And conversely, if you have to make your father do something painful and difficult, but you do it with love and the right style, you fulfill the mitzvah. The doctor says your father has to do something very difficult. I don't know, he's got to run on a treadmill for half an hour every day and it's like terrible, terrible pain. And you stand there encouraging him and forcing him to do it because he has to, because he needs it, but in a loving and positive way, you earn a share in the world to come for that. Is that clear? So it's not only what you do, you have to do the right thing, but you also have to do it in the way that is loving and respectful, that is there. Let's turn briefly to the positive side. That's the negative, awe, respect, reverence. Then there's the mitzvah called kibud. Kibud avaim means that you are required to do certain positive things for a parent, and here's what you're required to do. Feed them, give them to drink, cover them when they're cold, help them dress, put their shoes on, and take them wherever they need to be taken. And that's it. That, when you're, I'm talking about a parent who needs help dressing. You don't arrive in your father's bedroom every morning try to put his clothes on when he's perfectly capable of doing it himself. That's not the mitzvah. I'm talking about a parent who cannot manage, who needs help. They need to be taken somewhere because they're infirm or they can't see properly or whatever it is. So you have a mitzvah to feed them, to drink, help them dress, keep them warm, and take them wherever they need to be taken. Yes, all these can be done by proxy if necessary, if you don't live in the same country or you can't, etc. But that is the mitzvah that you're required to do, and technically at their expense. Putting clothes on doesn't mean you have to buy the clothes. If your parents can't afford what they need, then you certainly have a mitzvah to spend money, but the mitzvah is called tzedakah, charity. It's not called honoring parents. Is that clear? So your parents don't have enough to live on, and you have more than enough. So your 10% of charity has to go to your parents first, right? In the priority of giving tzedakah, parents come first, and unusually, tzedakah should not be given to only one place. One should try to give not more than 50% of one's charity funds to one source, to one place, but if it's your parents, whatever they need. And by the way, not only giving them enough to survive, giving them enough for what they're used to, which, by the way, is a general law in tzedakah. If you support somebody who has a certain lifestyle and he comes on difficult times, it isn't only a mitzvah to make sure he's got enough to survive. It's a full mitzvah to give him the dignity of what is appropriate for his station, right? That's, and certainly with parents. So parents are first in the hierarchy. Grandparents are also there. Other relatives, even an ex-wife also. Actually, there's certain obligations, although you shouldn't have personal contact with, if possible, with an ex-wife. But there are other relatives that also, and there are other hierarchy of obligations too. You're obliged to give charity to people in your city before people in another city, unless it's Yerushalayim, because that's every Jew city. But parents certainly qualify first on the list for tzedakah, but not because honoring parents requires the expenditure of money. So that is what one's required to do. And again, if you can't do it yourself, then you have to see to it that it's done. The law, in fact, is that when there's more than one child in the family, they have to share the burden of taking care of their parents. And if expenses are to be made, it must be done in proportion to the wealth of the various children in the family to see that the parents are taken care of at the level that is needed. If you can't do it personally, then provide it for through a proxy. So in summary, what we learned this evening, and I'll stop in case there's questions, I'm sure there's things I didn't cover. In summary, there are two branches to the mitzvah which are meshed. The one is the awe, reverence, respect, standing up, not using their first name. That's the one side. And then there's the positive side of doing for them what you are required to do, right? Which is certainly feeding, clothing, etc. And dubious in which category, spending time with them, quoting their, you know, presenting yourself as a child of theirs to give them honor, those sorts of things. But those are clearly the obligations. That's the basic approach to this mitzvah. Let me stop now for the questions because it may be important. Yes, please.
What happens with they ask you to buy them an cigarette or alcohol?
What happens if your parent asks you to buy something for them or do something for them that's harmful? There's a general law that you're not allowed to do anything for anyone that's harmful. So anyone asking you for cigarettes, you're not allowed to buy. Rav Moshe Feinstein 30 years ago wrote, you can't even pass the matches to a smoker because you're aiding and abetting. Yeah, you can't, you're not allowed to. So that applies in general, by the way. Someone comes to your door and asks you for money. he looks like the kind of person that you have doubts about what he'll use the money for. Maybe he'll use it for alcohol or something that'll be harmful. You give him a sandwich. You give him, don't turn him away empty-handed. Give him fruit. Give him a sandwich, right? If you're in doubt and you can only give money, give a small amount. So you're not allowed to do anything for anyone that is harmful, certainly not for parents. You have to do it lovingly and explain to them why you're not allowed to buy the cigarettes or the alcohol or whatever it is, if it's bad for them. That you can't do. Yes, please.
Shouldn't those things be bad for you? If they're bad for you, should they not be not allowed anyway?
I said so. That's what I just said.
If you're allowed to drink alcohol.
That's what I said. If it's not good, you can't do it. A certain amount of alcohol happens to be
good. I'm saying it's legal anyway.
Legal doesn't mean it's...
We're allowed by Jewish law to smoke and drink.
Is that so?
Therefore, we're not.
Is that correct?
Well, we drink wine.
That's not smoking. Oh, slowly. All halachic authorities today agree that smoking is not allowed halachically. Definitely. The consensus of opinion is bad for your health.
Then they say if you've started already, you can carry on. If you're addicted, you can keep it.
They don't say that. No. Addiction is not reason. It's true that many years ago, Rav Moshe Feinstein didn't take that step in his responsum to say that if you're already a smoker, you have to stop. He didn't say that. Many interesting reasons why not. That may be. But anyway, smoking is not good. Alcohol is halachically allowed, and it's not bad for you. In fact, a lot of modern evidence shows that a moderate intake of alcohol, like one unit or a couple units a day, is actually very good for your health. The previous evidence was red wine particularly. Today the feeling is all alcohol. Pregnancy is a different thing, but absolutely, if it's good for your parents, you should do it for them. Yes?
You stated before that a parent can't tell you to be married or that you can't. What if you said unless
it's a disgrace to your
family. But what if the spouse is, or the future spouse is righteous, or they're not disgraceful, but they're Gentile?
If the future spouse is Gentile, you can't marry them, not because your parents don't want.
No, but if you wanted to, would that also be?
Again, you can't marry a non-Jew because it's not valid, not a legal marriage. You can have a wonderful relationship with a non-Jew, but what's called kiddushin, that means Jewish marriage, does not take effect with a non-Jew. Just like two men cannot marry. They can have a wonderful, incredible relationship and have a very deep love, but kiddushin is not valid. It has nothing to do with the parents' opinion.
Would that still come under...
This has got nothing to do with honoring parents. Don't get confused. You can't marry a man, and you can't marry a non-Jew because it's not valid in Jewish law. It's nothing to do with parents. Yes.
Are you allowed to dishonor one of your parents if he's dishonoring the other one? Let's say your dad's beating up your mum, are you allowed to step in?
Well, you just said two things. Can you dishonor one parent when he's dishonoring the other? Can you step in when your dad's beating your mum? Well, let's get this clear. No. That's not a dishonor. You can't dishonor one. You can't show dishonor to a parent. But by the way, a very good general rule is don't mix in. A good general rule, don't mix in. Okay? You don't know what's going on between them. Stay out of it. When it's, more than unpleasant, you're there's sharp objects flying thing and there's like blood on the walls, yeah, then you're certainly obliged to step in. You have to do it respectively. You have to say, excuse me, Dad. And carry him away. Absolutely, yeah. Yes, please. Yes. Completely forbidden. Completely forbidden. If your parent asked you for an unkosher food, okay, do you have to get it? One scenario is where he could get it himself anyway, and one is where he's totally dependent on you to get it. Even if he could get it himself, you're not allowed to do it. Even if you say, well, don't bother, I'll do it myself. So you're not really making a difference. He's going to do it anyway. Definitely not allowed. Then even more so you're not allowed to do it. Again, if a person can't do a sin themselves and you make it possible, you're the reason why he's sinning. That's called lifnei iver. You're putting a stumbling block in front of the blind. This has nothing to do with parents. You can't make it possible for a person to sin. Is that clear? So if a person has an allergy and you give him something that's harmful, or you give him something halakhically prohibited, okay, you are guilty of a sin called putting a stumbling block in front of the blind. It's a question if it's a Torah law or a rabbinic law, depending if he could do it himself, if he couldn't do it himself, out the question. Yes, I'm surprised at these questions. I mean, isn't that obvious? Yeah?
If you work with your father...
Yes, not a good idea, generally.
When you're not around him, speaking with other people, if you find that calling him, say, Dad, causes them to lose a level of respect
good question.
For him and the relationship, are right. you allowed... allowed to then use his first name in order to keep their respect
Good
for
question.
The business?
Well, this is a complex question. If you work with your father, your parents, and in the course of your work you need to use his first name in the context, are you allowed to do that? First of all, like this. In many cases, it's worth thinking about whether it's best for you to work with your family anyway. Sometimes it's wonderful, but sometimes it leads to issues. If you do or you have to, or it's good for you, you should not use his first name. You should come up with a way of doing it in a way that is okay with all the people, but not just throwing his name or his first name around. Technically speaking, if you need to use his name, what's written in Jewish law is you should use some title of respect. In Hebrew, it's much more natural. You say, like, they're natural titles. In English, it's very hard to say, my dad, Mr. So-and-so, or Reb. It's not so awkward when you introduce him. You can say to somebody, this is my father, Mr. David Cohen. That's more respectful than just saying, my dad, Dave. You know, so in a walk situation, one should try to find a solution where you don't actually throw his first name. It's not good, no. Yes, please.
Does any of this apply to parents-in-law?
Okay, so the question is, does this apply to parents-in-law? Okay, the reason you should obey parents is because it's written in the Torah. The reason you should obey your mother-in-law, okay, is because that's called pikuach nefesh. That's called, you know, that's called life-saving, right? It's like, so even if you have the type of mother-in-law who needs a place to park her broom when she visits, right? You have to. So let me just mention briefly, it's like this. In-laws, grandparents, older brothers and sisters, step-parents. So here briefly is the law. Step-parent, you have a Torah mitzvah to honor as long as your parents married to them. So if your father married a woman who's not your mother, as long as he's married to her, not that they're not divorced or a parent has died, as long as they actively married, you have a Torah mitzvah to honor the step-parent, okay, as you do your own parent. Grandparents, definitely you have, not great-grandparents, I mean, of course you should, but the mitzvah is parents and grandparents. An interesting three-way argument why you have to honor your grandparents. Very briefly, I don't want to keep it too late. One opinion is because the Torah makes no distinction between grandparents and parents, so therefore since it deals with grandparents as if they're parents, or grandchildren as if they're children, so there's no distinction. You honor them like your parents. Second opinion is, you honor your grandparent, your grandfather, because he has to teach you Torah. There's a Torah mitzvah to teach your son, and a Torah mitzvah to teach your grandson. Livnecha v'livnei vanecha. You have to teach your son and your son's son. So since your grandfather has to teach you Torah, you have a mitzvah to honor him. The third opinion is, that you have to honor your grandparents because your parents do. The reason you have to honor your grandfather is because your father has to. So you have to do that too. Now, if you think about it, you'll realize we have no academic arguments in Judaism. Academic. It makes no difference, but academic. What's the difference? Why? You have to honor your grandparents. Answer is, it makes a big difference. For example, if you have to honor your grandfather like your father because he's similar to your father, then he doesn't necessarily come first. If they ask you for tea, it doesn't mean your grandfather comes first. But if you have to honor your grandfather because your father has to honor him, then your grandfather definitely comes first if you ask him for tea, because it's your father's mitzvah too. So it's not academic. I'm not going to go into the details, but the bottom line is, whichever the priorities are, you certainly have to honor grandparents. In-laws, you have to help your spouse in her mitzvah of honoring her parents. That's why you honor in-laws. And you have a Torah mitzvah to honor your older brother. Now, there's a dispute whether it's only the oldest brother and sister, or any older brother or sister. So it's very good sense to honor all of them correctly, and therefore the oldest brother should be served before you, when the food's being served, should be served to the older brother first, right? And you have a Torah mitzvah to honor an older brother. So that's more or less the hierarchy of people that are included, apart from only parents. Yes?
Yeah, you mentioned before about sitting or standing at the father's parents' place. But let's say if my parents weren't home, and I invited friends around for dinner.
Only if you have permission. Yes, you can't sit in your father's place unless he explicitly allows you to do that. And it's not a good idea if the people don't know that and they think your dad's out. Now you sit at the head of the table in his place. That's not a good... What? That's a good question. That's a good question. That's not a question of honoring parents. That's just what you call derech eretz. That means to go to a person's home and the man of the house or the mother of the house has a certain place and you're a guest and you go plonk yourself down in their place. There's a certain lack of sensitivity there. Unless it's necessary and it's clear and they've invited you, that's a question of judgment. Yes?
I'm sure it's hard for you to
to contradict you in my mind, because you said that when you go into a shop, you present yourself as a son of your parents.
If they know your parents and respect them?
Yeah. Then you also said a bit later on about using example of throwing money in the fire, and you know, you couldn't stop them. But
you can stop them, but you can't insult them.
Yeah, okay, so you couldn't insult them, but you could tell someone at the door kind of thing.
Yeah, if you can do it nicely, sure, to not let them in. That's not disrespectful. Right? On the contrary, you're doing a very wise thing. If you know your parents come in and they make a scene, it's a disgrace to them. You should be ashamed for them. So if you can have them headed off at the pass in such a way that you won't get into that situation, handle it wisely. Yes. Yes, please. Yes.
Nothing hard at the LS.
Yes.
Can one talk about one's parents to someone else in order to benefit the other person?
So that's a good question. The question is, we'll have to get into all the laws of Lashon Hara. Can you badmouth somebody? Can you say something bad about someone to someone else? So the law is that... The general law is like this. It doesn't matter whether it's your parents, your spouse, your child, anyone. When you're talking that bad information to another person under the conditions that the Torah allows, it's a benefit and necessary, you're not exaggerating, it's first-hand knowledge, you couldn't do it another way, you're not doing it vindictively, the damage will not be excessive. With all the 8 or 9 or 10 conditions, it doesn't matter if it's a parent or not. Let's say, for example, you have a problematic relationship with your father who's difficult, and you go to a counselor, a rabbi, a friend, a doctor, whatever it is. You can tell him all the details in order to solve the problem, subject to all the conditions. Yes, please.
In a situation where your son is a rabbi, does the father have to...
Oh, that's a wonderful question. Beautiful question.
And also, follow on from that, you mentioned that you gave an example in a family where you have to honor the older son by serving him first.
Yeah.
If one of the younger sons is a rabbi,
excellent question.
You have to honor that person
right.
And serve that brother.
The question is, when your father, the son is a rabbi, the son's a rabbi, so the father has to honor the rabbi, Kavodat Torah, right? If he's very learned and so forth and so on. The son has to honor the father because he's... I had that situation. My father encouraged me to get into learning much more, and I ended up giving lectures, and my dad used to be present. So when I used to walk in, my father used to stand in the front row and stand up for me, and it was terrible. Yeah? And I try to honor him as much as possible. This is written in the code of Jewish law, how you handle the situation where the father and the son have to honor each other, okay, and in public. On the one hand, the father must honor Torah correctly. On the other hand, the son is a learned person, but certainly honor his father. So there's very interesting resolutions of whether they shouldn't be seen together in public or how it should work. That's a question. And similarly, older brother, younger brother, and so on and so on.
And the answer is for the brothers?
No, there's no reason that the older brother shouldn't stand up for a very learned younger brother. Absolutely. On the Torah,
should you serve first?
That's a good question. The real question is only when the rabbi is your personal rabbi. For example, that even takes precedence over a father. For example, what's written is this. Let's say a person's father is drowning, and his Torah teacher is drowning, and he can only save one, saves his rabbi. And the reason is, because your father brings you into this world, but your Rebbe brings you into the next world. So he's a higher father in that sense. Now, if you don't like that idea, so if a father should be his son's Rebbe too, should teach him Torah ideally. If the father can't, and he pays for his son's Torah education, then he achieves the law of being his Rebbe too, because the people who teach the son are only proxies of the father, right? So if your father pays for your Torah education, then if he's drowning, you have to save him. So pay for your kid's Torah education, okay? So one day if you're struggling in the water, your kid's going to save you. Yes?
I have heard that when a person converts, they receive a new soul, and so as such, their family is not really their family anymore.
Yeah.
They still have the...
That's a wonderful question which we come across often. Maybe we'll finish with this. When a person converts to Judaism, they become a newborn person. Right? So now this person is a convert. What's their relationship with their non-Jewish parents? Who are the ones who brought them into the world? Who do maybe very people worthy of respect? They may have a very good relationship. But technically they're not related anymore. Because a convert to Judaism is a new person. He has no relatives. According to Torah law, a convert to Judaism can marry his own mother or sister if she converts. Right? Again, brother and sister convert to Judaism. They can now marry each other because they're not related. We don't allow this. Okay? There's a very good reason rabbinically why this is not allowed. Excellent reason. But technically speaking, from a Torah point of view, they're not related. So your question is, this person's now a convert to Judaism. Their parents are not actually related to them for Jewish. However, it's certainly correct to honor them. First of all, they brought this person into the world. Secondly, it's a human, so a dignity. There are many cases where the child not only wants to honor the parents, they actually want to sit shiva for them when they die, or say Kaddish and things like that. And in many cases, halachic authorities have actually allowed that, even though there's no technical obligation, because it's not a Jewish person. But there's a lot of leeway and a lot of practical experience in this area. Yes?
So they can't draw blood from your parents?
Oh, that's a very good question. Okay, Matt, let's make this the final question, although, of course, there's plenty to talk about. What about drawing blood from a parent? There's a special Torah prohibition of injuring a parent, very, very serious prohibition, and technically you transgress this at the level of being obligated when you draw blood. Now, that means if you hit a parent, of course you're not allowed to do that, but to be culpable at the Torah level of that, you have to, it's a blow that draws blood. Bruising counts as drawing blood, by the way. It doesn't have to be. So here's the question. If the son is a dentist, or the daughter's a nurse, and now they're going to treat the parent, and in the course of the treatment, there will be a drawing of blood. Of course, they don't intend to harm them, but they will be drawing blood. Give an injection to a parent, right? Or remove a splinter from a parent. All sorts of things where there may be. And very often, the father doesn't want anyone else to treat him. My son, the doctor, you know, the dentist, they won't go anybody else, right? So this is also written very clearly in the Talmud, and the sources talk about it. It's much better if a person that's not the child can treat the parent. But where the parent is suffering, or there's no other option, or they especially want the child to do it, and he's not intending to draw blood, he's just intending to remove the splinter, and if blood comes out, there are many reasons why that could be allowed under those practical circumstances. But it's much better to avoid, if possible, not to treat one's own parents, not except for the... So any final... Yes, please. I don't think Rabbi Zulzbacher, after father's nifter, is that still his seat? I don't think it's his seat anymore if he's not there, no? Oh, beautiful. It's a special honor to your father to sit in that seat now. No? Okay, thanks. We'll continue the session.